Hello, and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and your favorite media. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my marvelous co-host with me today, Matt Ross. How are you doing today, Matt?
I'm doing well.
Well, we're going to see how we can push that boundaries, because I think our first question from our listeners here is about a person or a fictional character that Matt and I famously do not like. But if you want to ask us questions out there, you can go ahead and send us questions. We accept those through email at podcast@blizzardwatch.com. We ask that you specify the show that it is for in the subject line, as well as any special pronunciation of your name. Basically, just make sure you tell us what show it's for, please, because there's a lot of them that it's like question for whatever. No, let us know where you want us to answer, because we go completely different areas when depending on which show it is. If you want to hit us up on Discord, we have the Q and Podcast Questions channel. Same rules apply. If you are a Patreon subscriber, you have two methods to get in hold of us. First is the Patron Q and Podcast Questions channel. We tend to look there first. It's a way of saying thank you to our patrons for helping us keep the lights on. And you can also send us messages directly on Patreon, in which the overlords of the site will ensure that we get those questions in a relatively timely manner. Again, same rules apply. But with that out of the way, we'll go ahead and get started with this from Sour Waffles, who is one of our newly minted Patreon supporters. Thank you, Sour Waffles. I'd like to hear the backstory on Odin, and I'd appreciate getting your perspectives on why you seem to genuinely dislike him. Where to begin?
Okay, I'm going to run through as close to a bare bones as I can for you, then come in and flesh out as you choose to. Odin is one of several Titan Watchers who was basically created from the material of Azeroth to serve as, for lack of a better word, surgical tools, because the Titans couldn't just get in there and jam their gigantic hands onto the planet without causing problems. Because it's like a surgeon who just decides to stick his hand inside the patient instead of using scalpels and, you know, scopes and so forth. There's only so much hand in the thing you can do. So they realized that the planet Azeroth had all these horrible old god type things infesting throughout its body, and they'd seen what happened to one planet when that was the case. So, actually, I don't remember if they did see that, because that Sargeras was by himself. I don't think they did see it.
No, that was just Sargeras.
But when they came to it, they're like, okay, what do we do here? How do we fix this? This planet is clearly going to be a humdinger of a planet, and we need to do something. So they made the Titan Watchers, who then themselves made smaller Titan Forged in order to serve as the armies to help fight the forces of the old gods.
Which was intentional, right? The Titans created the facilities to help facilitate that with the Keepers.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The Keepers set to oversee the production of that army and basically be generals of those armies.
Yep. And that's exactly what they meant to do. And whilst they were doing it, first they had to kind of they had to take the servants of the old gods off the board before they could move on to fighting their direct minions. And those servants were the elemental lords. Ragnaros. I can't remember his name.
Thunder Fury.
Thunderon's the son of the one. He's the son of the one that he was fighting. Was Alakir? Yeah, Alakir.
Alakir the Windseeker.
Alakir, Ragnaros. I've talked about her a billion times, and now I'm having trouble remembering her name.
The Earth
Mother. And Neptalon. And Therizane.
Yeah. Yep, Therizane and Neptalon.
Therizane and Neptalon. These four, each of them had like a powerful force of elemental minions, and themselves were extremely powerful. In fact, they weren't overpowered by the old gods. That's always worth pointing out. It wasn't that the elemental lords were defeated due to the power of the old gods. The old gods had access to some kind of magic that allowed them to control the four elements, the four elemental lords in particular. And that magic may have been similar to that which was used to summon Ragnaros back to Azeroth, which blew up, you know, back when Azeroth blew up the whole, you know, the mountains that are now the burning steppes and the blasted lands. But regardless, the elementals, if you do the time travel thing in Dragonflight, you get to go back to the moment where they were actually fighting.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually see the old gods and the elemental lords fighting, and you'll notice that the elemental lords weren't losing.
No, they weren't.
They were not getting their butts kicked. So elemental lords, very powerful. They were under the dominion of the old gods due to specific magic that the old gods had access to. Although, not because of any raw power.
We, and this is just a random aside here and a note for later that we'll probably cover. When you do go back, you don't see all of the elemental lords fighting. Just going to throw that out there.
That's true.
Valentine's Day is coming up, and for me, there's only one place I trust, 1-800-Flowers.com. This year, 1-800-Flowers wants to make sure you're a Valentine's hero with an exclusive offer. Double the roses for free. When you buy one dozen, they'll double your bouquet to 2 dozen roses. It's the perfect way to say I love you without breaking the bank. Trust me, 1-800-Flowers always delivers. To claim your double the roses offer, go to 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Dear old work platform, it's not you, it's us. Actually, it is you. Endless onboarding? Constant IT bottlenecks? We've had enough. We need a platform that just gets us. And to be honest, we've met someone new. They're called Monday.com, and it was love at first onboarding. Their beautiful dashboards, their customizable workflows got us floating on a digital cloud nine. So no hard feelings, but we're moving on. Monday.com, the first work platform you'll love to use.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Have you ever wondered if there is a dark side to your neighbor, your boss, the delivery driver? These seemingly ordinary people walk among us, and sometimes they harbor the darkest of secrets. The award-winning podcast They Walk Among Us has returned for its milestone 10th season. The show opens with a chilling two-part investigation into a lesser-known serial killer. In 1986, Kenneth Erskine, dubbed the Stockwell Strangler, terrorized London's elderly. A drifter with no fixed address, Erskine proved eerily difficult to track. Join us as we uncover the haunting stories of his victims, trace the investigation that finally brought him to justice, and examine the lasting impact of his crimes. Follow They Walk Among Us anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
But anyway, so the first thing that happened was the various watchers, and there's a whole bunch of them, and I'm going to forget some, but Master Ra, also known as Ra-Den, he was one. Odin's another. Tyr's another. Thorim's another. Mimiron's another. Loken was another. I want to say Freya. Yeah, Freya was another. Mm-hmm. There may be more. Like, we've seen some more down in, like, Uldum and so forth. But at least the ones I just mentioned and a few others were there.
Yeah, real quick, Odin, just to go through them, the ones that we know are Arcades, Freya, Hodir, Loken, Mimron, Odin, Ra, Thorin, and
Oh, that's leaving out the ones from the Halls of Origination, though.
This is updated as far as that goes as being actual watchers. The other
Those
ones,
guys are watchers.
Sorry, keepers or whatever. The high designates. The other ones are not technically in that category. They're basically sub them, I think.
If you're counting Arcadis, then you have to count them. I'm sorry. I don't know who wrote this. But I got a beef with you, person who wrote this. But anyway, getting back to it. Those guys were involved in various fights against the Elemental Lords to get them out of the way. And one of the things was we have Ra-Den, for example, who, along with Odin's quote-unquote daughter, Helia, created the elemental planes as prisons for these various elemental lords. That's where the Firelands, the Temple of the Windseeker. I don't remember what the Neptalons is, the Abyssal Maw, right?
Yes.
I don't remember what Therizane's deep, it's Deep Home?
Deep Home.
Yeah, Deep Home. So those are the four elemental planes that were created to imprison the elemental lords once they were defeated. Odin first, quote-unquote, distinguishes himself in battle. Him and Tyr together took on Ragnaros. And if you ever wonder why Odin has that flaming beard, that's not a flaming beard. That's the stuff of his face. Because Ragnaros literally put an eternally melting fire on it. So his face is continuously melting. When he fought Ragnaros, Ragnaros did that to it. Whether or not that's why Odin is such a J-E-R-K. Yes, I spelled jerk. That's weird. Anyway, that happened. Odin, therefore, kind of always kind of gave Tyr this gunk eye after that. He was very much like, yee, you let that guy burn my face off. I'm not entirely sure you didn't do that on purpose. So I don't trust you as much anymore, Tyr. But regardless, the bunch of them succeeded in defeating the Elemental Lords and imprisoning them thanks to Helya and Master Ra's elemental prisons. This then led up to the actual fight against the old gods, which was nightmarishly hard. The Elemental Lords, they had a place to put them at least. Like, once you get up to the Lord and manage to subdue it, they had a prison waiting for it.
Mm-hmm.
They had nothing for the old gods. They had to make prisons for them.
They had to make prisons around them because the old gods could not be removed from where they were, because otherwise you get horrendous rents and wounds in the world.
Which they only found out, by the way, this is the best part, is they were fighting their way through the various old gods. They got up to the most powerful of them, Ysraj. And when they got to Ysraj, the fight was going so middlingly for them that eventually Kaz, you know, not Kaz.
Amandul.
Was Amandul, thank you. I was saying Kaz. Amandul got tired of waiting and decided to just reach down and pop that pimple himself, thinking, well, I'm super powerful, so I'm sure this will go fine. And it didn't go fine. It did the opposite of going fine, because the thing Joe just said, I wish I could have the ability to just make it go like wavy lines and you'd hear Joe say it again. But actually, Joe, say it again.
Literally, you get this horrendous rent and wound in the world.
That's exactly what they made. That's exactly what happened when he ripped Ysraj out of the world. He created the Shah. He left, you know, rotting bits of old god all over a big chunk of Azeroth. At the time, Kalimdor being one continent. So across it, all these chunks of old god that shouldn't be there, just in general, a real mess. The other, they realized, oh, we can't do that to the other old gods. So they started, you know, frantically building emergency prisons, like kind of like, you know, tire locks when you want to like stop a car from like leaving so you can put a ticket on it and maybe impound it. They had to put like old god locks on the old gods to keep them from doing anything else. Which, of course, they spent the next however long, because, you know, with time at this point is well beyond a scale most mortal beings think of. They spent all that time trying to get out, because they're the old gods. They don't want to stay locked in these things. So all that aside, you're wondering, why necessarily is Odin such a jerk then? What did he do that was so bad? I'm like, all that stuff was fine because the Titans were like right there supervising.
Mm-hmm.
When the Titans left, they put Odin in charge
as the title of prime designate.
Yes. And when Odin became prime designate, he immediately assumed that meant that everybody had to do what he said or else. Just some of the greatest hits on the Odin parade. His daughter Helya refused to reach into the Shadowlands for him and help him create an army of undead things because she didn't think it was a good idea, so he killed her and did it to her,
which is after he decided that he knew better than the rest of the keepers, who wanted to empower the dragon flights in order to become protectors of Azeroth alongside them. Let's not skip that part. These things that fought bravely against this horrible terror Galakrond, which they made, by the way, should can't be trusted. But I'm going to go make an undead army, essentially. And you're going to go ahead and look into the Shadowlands. Oh, you don't want to do that? I'm sorry. You're now the Valkyrie number one. Enjoy this new lot in your unlife.
Yeah, first, you're the first one. As Joe pointed out, not only did Odin not want to trust the dragons, he literally took his ball and went home. Except in this case, his ball was his home. Like, you know how there's a big trench in front of Ulduar? That's because there was another hall on it, you know, like the halls of stone, the halls of lightning. There was a hall of valor, and Odin decided, I don't want to be in Ulduar anymore. So he literally ripped the halls of valor out of the rock, made it float, and then made his daughter put it in another dimension. Because remember, she knew how to make dimensions when she was hanging out with Master Ra. Also, at the same time, while he was doing all this stuff, which is bad enough, he was directly making treaties with, like, you know, creatures of the Shadowlands, which is how he ended up. You remember the eye that we used to see
that
all the time?
I was going to say the eye that he doesn't have anymore, the eye that he traded in order for this information.
Yeah, it actually became a raid boss
mm-hmm.
in I want to say Legion, but it's not Legion. My Torghast. God, why can't I? Or, thank
the,
you.
Yeah, it, not Torghast, but the
Shadowlands. The expansion in question was Shadowlands.
It was in Shadowlands. Yeah, it was in our final assault on the home of the jailer, which that's tied in here too.
Yes. So the jailer, all the stuff the jailer was doing, he couldn't have done half of it if some jumped up Titan servant hadn't offered his own eye in exchange for the ability to make Kyrian. Which is exactly what the Valkyrie are. They're Kyrian made by somebody other than the one that's supposed to be making them.
They're Kyrian. They're Kyrian without free will.
Yeah. Well, then again, the Kyrian are Kyrian without free will for a lot of the period of time.
Debatable. Well, that's a whole other topic.
Point being, Odin did this kind of stuff all the time. Furthermore, whilst he was prime designate and then he took himself and went back to another dimension, he left the seat of prime designate basically empty. And because he did that, Loken managed to do all sorts of bad stuff, including convince Helya that she didn't want to be an undead monster serving Odin, who was a monster even bigger in his own horrible way. And thus she banished the Halls of Valor and trapped Odin out, making it possible for Loken to usurp the role.
Meanwhile, let's also not forget the part that at this time, Loken, who was one of the folks assigned to watch over the prison Alduar, which it is a prison built over the body and head or whatever you want to call it of Yog-Saron, was being influenced by the whispers of Yog-Saron, because that's a thing that you can't escape when you are literally there all day, every day.
And since Odin wasn't there doing his job, there wasn't anybody who could stop him. And for every time anyone gives Thorim grief for not being able to stop Loken because he wasn't paying attention, Thorim at least had the loss of his wife. You know, he wasn't pitching a fit because people didn't like him. And that's the thing. Ultimately, all this comes down to is Odin being mad that the other Watchers liked Tyr more than him.
And don't forget that Tyr is the one that brought the idea forward to empower the Dragonflights to become protectors of Azeroth, which just was an extra little wrinkle for him to obsess over.
Yep.
And again, this is we're barely scratching the surface so far. There's so much more.
And heck, I don't want to be completely upfront with you. When you ask why I don't like Odin, none of this has anything to do with why I don't like. I don't like Odin because I had to be in a freaking order hall with him for an entire expansion where he treated me like his Pokemon. Like, and I had to prove myself worthy 12 times. Like, constantly proving myself worthy to a guy who's never actually been worthy in his life. But I got to prove myself worthy again.
But that's also part and parcel with, like, his history, right? Nobody was good enough. Nobody was worthy enough unless it was his idea or he was the one that was making that ultimate decision. It was one of those things where he also looked down upon mortal races. The folks that were constructed the Titan Forged were okay. They were soldiers. They were chaff. They were cattle to be slaughtered or be used as tools.
I would say more cannon fodder than cattle.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. More cannon fodder, but they were cannon fodder to be spent. And then you have us who succumbed to the curse of flesh, AKA what I will always argue was the natural state and end game for all of this from the very beginning. We were weak and we shouldn't have been, and we've been corrupted, and therefore we couldn't be trusted. And the only ones that could be trusted were pure races like the Vykrul, who would then be turned into Valajar, into his personal army, where didn't matter how noble the other mortal races' souls were, only these souls would be turned into his warriors.
But it's worth noting that he didn't pick any Vykrul that were flesh.
It's true. They were only the ones that were
like iron ones or whatever.
Iron or stone, the from the Halls of Stone or the Halls of Iron, like Halls of Lightning, the folks that were, still, and I'm going to air quote here, pure. And that's just it's his whole character shtick. Like, that's his thing. He is I'm just going to call a spade. He's basically like the prime racist of Azeroth, right?
Well, I mean, look at how he treated the Storm Dragons.
Yeah.
Who were completely loyal to him, by the way. They were right there doing what he said to do, not arguing with him at all. And he still treated them like crap to the point where a proto dragon, essentially, I can't remember her name, the ice lady, ice dragon lady,
the one that became one of the nether pillars.
Viranoff. Yeah, Viranoff shows up and basically tells him to his face that he's a jerk, and gets the dragons to like literally be like, he is a jerk. Oh my god, this whole time we've been letting him be a jerk, and they all just left. You know, this is the kind of guy Odin is. The problem with Odin is quite simply that he doesn't realize that just saying "do what I say" because the Titans said I can tell you to do what I say doesn't work, because the Titans aren't here. There's nobody behind him, backing him when he says these things. So he'd have to build consensus amongst his fellow watchers. But instead of doing that, he just took his ball and ran home. He just yells at them. And if they don't do what he wants, if they decide to empower, you know, dragons, and you'll notice that the Titans responded and gave each of these dragons a tiny slice of their power. So it's not like the Titans themselves weren't on board with this idea. To the point where I actually find myself wondering, do you think maybe the Titans didn't name him Prime Designate?
Yeah, I've often been wondering that, right? Like, because it's one of those things, and I'm sure we'll find out more about it as we go along, because this is all going to be tied into the next two expansions that are coming, right? But we don't actually know if he was named Prime Designate, or because he was created by Amon-Thul, that he just was like, yep, this is my job now, and nobody thought to question it because, well, he worked for Amon-Thul, right? Like,
well, for that matter, the thing that keeps coming to my mind is Loken managed to tell basically managed to tell all the stuff at Ulduar, I'm Prime Designate now. And that implies to me that maybe there was another thing that reminds me of this too, that there was a way to get a new aspect.
Yeah, I think that either there was never actually meant to be a Prime Designate, or that it was put in place to that whoever was there at that time, whoever was in charge of that particular facility, just happened to be considered the Prime Designate for that facility, right? We don't know how that interacts everywhere else. We don't know how that interacted at the other facilities, do we?
It just seems, not only do we not know that, it just seems really odd to me that both Tyr and Master Ra never seem to follow Odin's directives in any way.
It took a lifetime to find the person you want to marry. Finding the perfect engagement ring is a lot easier. At BlueNile.com, you can find or design the ring you've always dreamed of with help from Blue Nile's jewelry experts, who are on hand 24/7 to answer questions, and the ease and convenience of shopping online. For a limited time, get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more with code LISTEN at BlueNile.com. That's $50 off with code LISTEN at BlueNile.com.
Everyone knows that it's not Valentine's without 1-800-Flowers.com. So whatever you do, don't forget the flowers. Right now, when you order early from 1-800-Flowers, you can get a gorgeous bouquet of assorted roses starting at $24.99. It's the perfect way to say I love you without breaking the bank. Don't put this off. Quantities are limited, so lock in your roses starting at $24.99 today at 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Well, don't forget
that Master Ra doesn't even stop for them.
Well, also don't forget that Tyr, who empowered Tyr?
Amon-Thul.
Yeah. So they were both cut from the same cloth, so to speak. They were both empowered by the same entity.
So was Master Ra.
And so was Master Ra.
The three of them, I mean, I find myself wondering if there was supposed to be some kind of triumvirate, and the other two went off doing things, just understanding, yeah, the three of us are going to handle this stuff. And then Odin decides, well, I'm the Prime Designate. And they're like, well, whatever. You can be the Prime Designate, I guess. I don't know what that means, but sure. Like, it just, the fact that Loken could convince everything that he was that himself, and that, you know, it just makes me think, did Loken figure out, like, when Odin took his ball and ran, did he figure out that, oh, well, if I seal away the Halls of Valor into another dimension, he's not no longer going to have operator access. And since he doesn't have operator access, I can just make myself, you know, for lack of a better word, like, you know, the primary guy on a computer system who gets to tell the system what to do. Maybe he just put himself in there. because there was nobody, there was no one there anymore since Odin had gone and huffed off. There's just a lot of possibilities to this. It just feels weird that they would leave Odin in charge. Not that Odin didn't accomplish a lot of stuff, but he was always the worst at actually leading people. Like, it just seems odd. But then again, of course, I don't like Odin, so maybe I'm not giving him his due. But there's a whole bit, like we found out in Dragonflight, that Odin was deliberately obscuring the knowledge of the first ones from pretty much everybody.
Not only purposely obscuring the knowledge of the first ones, but also purposely obscuring the origins of Galakrond and purposely obscuring any number of bits of information that probably the other keepers would have loved to have known. We also, I believe, and wasn't Aldir a directive of Odin as well? I can't remember. With Mother of Research.
I remember it being directed. I don't remember if it was actually, if Odin has ever specifically said to have said, let's do this. But I do know that Odin has specifically said to essentially go after the ones in Avaloran who were quarantined for some reason. They were prisoners or something. They escaped and he sent his people after them and they failed 4 times. Mm-hmm. And then like the last guy was like, can we please not send any more people? It's not working. They just keep coming back dead. Or they don't come back at all. Either way, let's not do this anymore. So yeah, Odin's track record as a leader is not good.
Yeah, I mean, it's suspect at best. But I mean, the other things to keep in mind here too is that all of his decisions directly contributed to either the pain points of several major events in Azeroth's history, or, you know, actively worked against the best interest of Azeroth and its inhabitants for his own hubris. And you see that as you go through all of the questing, right? Like, we can go on about all the other stuff and the particulars about him, like to the point where the people that follow him or the Vykrul that followed him or wanted to be like him were fanatics, just like they were trying to be in the Lich King's army. You can go back and compare those two things, which there are a lot of similarities. But as you go through Legion and as you meet Javi, the Vrykrul, and learn more about it and realize that it is Odin, none of it is good, right? A lot of it is, you know, actively working against Helios horses, which on the surface seems fine. But then you start learning that he's the reason Helia is there. You learn that he's the reason the Valkyr exist to begin with, that he's part of the problem that caused. Because, again, had he not done this, those Valkyr never would have existed. Sylvanas never would have had her 9. Those wouldn't have been there. The Lich King wouldn't have had his Valkyr. None of those would be there. He started this chain of events. And then again, his blatant disregard for all the rest of the mortal races, and even if he wasn't, and I'm going to air quote here, trapped in his own dimension, he wouldn't have lifted a hand to help us. Nothing indicates that he would have helped us at all. He would have just continued building his army in his little pocket dimension until he felt that he could take the field and have a decisive victory, however long that would be. He didn't help us with the Mogu. He didn't help us with the remnants of Yashiraj. And we know that he was active during that time because Javi was active during that time. So he figured out a way to skirt the rules or whatever was imposed upon him. We see him still favoring and trying to empower the Vrykrul under his tutelage, to the point where even others are twisted by the fell energies of the Legion by promises of extra power because they can't either meet up to Odin's standards. They haven't been selected. Or they want to show how powerful they are, and they're swayed by this promise of more power. He actively caused that to happen. It's fascinating how this one, I don't even want to call him a creature that was supposed to be built to protect the world, has actively made decisions that have harmed it, actively harmed it. So when we say we don't like Odin, it's for a myriad of reasons. Matt, because he didn't like being a Pokemon, and me, because, again, it's a character that you're not supposed to like. Like,
yeah,
he is not a pure, innocent person. And to that effect, Tyr isn't either. None of them really are. But Odin is so much worse, keeping secrets, not letting everybody else know what's going on, not doing anything but taking his ball and going home, leading to Loken taking over, leading to the essentially the old gods becoming free and active again. Because again, had he not left, had he had actually done the self-appointed job, do you think that Yogg-Saron would have always been free if they had all been paying attention and doing their tasks instead of being spun off to do whatever they wanted to do on their own? If he actually did his job of trying to unite them, or his self-proclaimed job?
Well, I mean, look to it something else that we haven't really talked about here, but there's a point in Battle for Azeroth where you attempt to connect to all the Titan installations. When you connect to Ulduar, Mimiron immediately hangs up on you. He disconnects Ulduar from the network.
Yep.
Did he do that on his own? Because I mean, in the past, I've gone up to Ulduar and had Mimiron, like, you know, help me save my dog from death. I mean, it's just, you know, Mimiron seems pretty okay with talking to people.
And the interesting thing about that is, after the Trials of Valor, one of the things that Odin straight up says is that he's going to Ulduar, right? That he should visit his watcher kin. It's the first thing he says.
Keep in mind that that's, you know, that right there, he allowed, bloody hell. God, I'm getting old. The fish old god.
Nazoth.
The one that dealt with Ashara. Nazoth, thank you. He just allows Nazoth to run free. He's not only not doing anything about it, he's unwilling to help you do something about it. And there's also a whole deal in Legion where the Legion just invades Ulduar. Just straight up invades it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, while you're there, like, while Odin sends you there to talk to somebody, I think it's a Thorim, and it gets invaded by the Legion. He doesn't say anything about that to you. You know, he doesn't warn anybody. Like, there's just so many examples of this. Outside of my disliking the whole being treated like a Pokemon thing, is the fact that Odin is continuously trying to make everybody else prove their worth to him when he himself does not display a whole lot of worth proving.
Well, and there's more to it, too. Like, there's some Shadowlands stuff that I just want to, like, cover real quickly that I think is interesting. Yeah,
this all relates to the eye, too, by the way.
Well, not just the eye, but in Shadowlands, when we are waging war against the Jailer, right? Odin's Valkyr go missing, and part of our task is to go see if we can try to find them. And it's turned out that Helia's not dead. She's actually still alive, and she's actually corrupting the Valkyr into Mossworn, with the eye of the Jailer, the eye of Odin, that he gave up all that long ago. And instead of helping us in taking the fight to them, which he could in theory do, he has armies he could lend us. He could say, hey, you're going to battle there. You have a way to bring armies there. I have an army. Do you need help? You helped me. Let me help you. No. He's going to go wage war himself, right? Odin declares that this is an insult that will not be stand. He has us create the Iskahorn to lure the eye to battle, and then asks us to recruit a group of worthy Valkyr to accompany Danica, the Reclaimer, into battle. And that's it. That's what he does. And that's all he does. And as soon as that is done, what does he do? Nothing. Like, it's that same mentality. I can do this. I can do whatever I want. You're going to help me, but I'm not helping you. Yeah. That's why I don't like
I mean, there's even more to it. Like, for example, the fact that, I mean, essentially what he did to Helia is, I mean, it's beyond any kind of violation you can think of. She said no, so he killed her and made her into the thing that she didn't want any part of helping him do.
Mm-hmm.
And then he made her do it over and over again until finally Loken could awaken her to what was happening. So he made her a slave. So yeah, it's just, it's wild. How bad Odin is. And a lot of it could be just, it's not Odin is evil and wants, you know, the world to fall in fire and be destroyed. It's Odin is a my way or the highway. I'm not going to listen to anybody but myself. I'm the prime designate, me type. It's not even just selfishness. It's flat out a refusal to empathize with anybody else. And it's kind of astonishing to see this Titan creation who is flat out, he seems to think he is the Titans, and it's kind of disturbing. So yeah, lots of reasons to dislike Odin. I think we could talk more, but we've probably got other stuff we should talk about.
I would say, and maybe part of that is his defect from when the, you know, essence of the Titans was slammed into the Keepers, because we don't know if or how much of Amonthul's essence he got if any. Or
we know that at least him and Ra both got some.
Yeah. And it definitely affected Ra in a very specific way.
Yeah, Ra pulled his out to keep it from driving him crazy. And eventually, of course, we know it got out because we've seen Amonthul's essence in a different dungeon. We've spoken with it. But what happens when you have all that Amonthul? And we know Amonthul wasn't always super nice. There's a whole bit like in the end of Dragonflight where we find out Amonthul was like real suspicious of Freya and really didn't like
Alun.
Alun, yes, thank you. I was trying to say Eowyn for some reason. Like, no, not a Tolkien character. But yeah, no, he's Amonthul's like the most orderly manifestation of order. And it feels like it's possible that being exposed to that made Odin think, I've got to make everything orderly. And since I have to make it orderly, I'm the best person to decide what is orderly. And combine that with the other possibility, which is that getting his face permanently melted broke some stuff in his head.
Yeah.
You know, no one's ever seemed to stop and think about that one. He's got a permanent burn on his face that is continuing to burn him forever. Maybe get that looked at.
Yeah, it ain't pretty. Hopefully that answers your question a little bit about Odin's.
I mean, we
could have
done a whole show about how terrible Odin is, man, but you know, we do want to do other things.
We really could. But I think we're gonna move on to our next question, and this one comes from Scribble Lee. The season's comic was lovely to look at, and the video version showcased the excellent voice actors. However, I admit that I didn't see much new content from it. We see a rehashing of underlying themes in The War Within about healing, finding an appreciation, and appreciating peace. How do you feel it moved the needle for character and story? So interestingly enough, I don't know that it necessarily moved the needle, but I think it focused on a part that the needles have often skipped from. Like an old record, sometimes parts of it don't get hit when you're running that needle. And some of the things and the themes here, yes, there is some rehashing. We've done this in a couple different places. However, really, truly, when did these characters ever really stop to accept healing? When did Khadgar ever really look back and say, okay, I need to really evaluate what I'm doing with my life, my role in the world, and what I'm doing and what I can do that will be the best benefit to those around me? When did Illyria do that? When did Tyrion do that? When have any of them really sat down to really have that discussion? And now you're seeing them forced to do that. Even Jaina, like with the stuff with the Kirin Tor. Dalaran is gone, right? I'm sorry, spoilers, etc. But Dalaran is no more. And they actually have to have, for the first time in an extraordinarily long time, an honest conversation about what Dalaran was, what Dalaran represented, and if it is still what the Kirin Tor are, right? The Kirin Tor moved away from their roots of being research, but and for the betterment of everybody and coming together when they were needed versus a machine of war, because that's what Dalaran has become since they ripped it out of the ground. It was the staging point for our battle against the Lich King. It was our staging point for fighting against the Legion. And it was going to be our staging point for what we're dealing with now. Whatever existential threat we knew was coming or thought we were coming, we were all but ready to just teleport Dalaran into the middle of that and use it as such.
It took a lifetime to find the person you want to marry. Finding the perfect engagement ring is a lot easier. At BlueNile.com, you can find or design the ring you've always dreamed of with help from Blue Nile's jewelry experts who are on hand 24/7 to answer questions and the ease and convenience of shopping online. For a limited time, get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more with code LISTEN at BlueNile.com. That's $50 off with code LISTEN at BlueNile.com.
Everyone knows that it's not Valentine's without 1-800-Flowers.com. So whatever you do, don't forget the flowers. Right now, when you order early from 1-800-Flowers, you can get a gorgeous bouquet of assorted roses starting at $24.99. It's the perfect way to say I love you without breaking the bank. Don't put this off. Quantities are limited, so lock in your roses starting at $24.99 today at 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
And that's not what it was originally created for. That's not what the Kirin Tor were made for, what that organization was about. And now the whole conversation is, what do we do now? How do we move forward? And I think that's the themes that, while we've had them, we've never actually seen many of the NPCs really do this. Even Jaina barely started getting moved forward during Battle for Azeroth. And to be honest, this is a final thing of hers that was sort of, I don't want to say tying her down, but she was a member of the Kirin Tor, a senior member, all things considered, one of the most powerful. People looked to her for answers, and she was still tied down to whatever the Kirin Tor was. And now they finally get to have that conversation, that talk. At least that's my opinion. What do you think, Matt?
Pumpkin spice is really good in a drink. No, all right, I'll be serious. The way that this expansion is going in terms of what it's how it's set up and what it's set up to do, I think there's going to be more of this kind of, there's going to be more retrospective patches, for lack of a better word. And I feel like this was a retrospective patch. This was a patch where they stop and go, okay, yeah, we've handled the initial problem and we're not going to Goblin Town yet. So let's all sit back and look at the fact that Dalaran fell out of the freaking sky. And even though we stopped the power that had been stolen from it from being used exactly as Xalatath intended it, we really didn't stop Xalatath in any meaningful way. But we don't know where she is or what she's doing. So we're going to take some time and really think about what we've lost here. And I think that is important because that's something we don't get a lot of in World of Warcraft. If you look back at every expansion ever, you get to a certain point and then it ends. And then there's like elemental invasion. Oh, hey, demon invasion. Oh, hey, undead invasion. And we just jump into the next thing. So having this moment where, I don't know how to put this without sounding a little weird about it, but having Aethys Sunreaver and Jaina Proudmoore standing next to each other on the beach going, wow, yeah, we got to do something else with our lives, don't we? It's actually a big deal because Aethys Sunreaver and Jaina Proudmoore haven't been within 5 feet of each other in like 5 expansions, you know? And there's that moment where you get the sense that I don't think either Aethys or Jaina feel like they did the wrong thing. But they've also realized that there is no point in arguing about it anymore, that it isn't worth doing. And I think that just that scene of them gathering together things and of all things, Khadgar in his floating wheelchair, it isn't attempting to jump the story forward. It's attempting to say, okay, and here's where we did things that people actually do when stuff like this happens to them. Like when disaster strikes, people don't just immediately flip into the next thing. They stop and grieve. They mourn. They think about what it means. And I think that that's where they were going with it. I think it worked pretty well for that. But if you want the next story bit, that's what the bigger patches in between are the ones that give you that. This was never intended to be a big story patch. This was intended to be a bridge. You know, here's what's been going on. You know, while your character was desperately trying to stop all the bad things from happening. And now we've gotten this memorial set up and we've said goodbye to Dalaran. It's quite possible we'll get another Dalaran at some point. It just won't be that one.
Well, they've basically said in game the characters don't want to create not what Dalaran was, and instead we might get maybe places where they meet, but they've flat out said that they don't want it to be like it was. So if we get
But my point isn't that. My point is that, you know, there's that big crater back where Dalaran used to be that people could live in if it was fixed. It doesn't have to be the Kirin Tor's home anymore. You know, Dalaran was a Kirin Tor's home for a very long time, but there were also people living there. And there are people who need places to live all over Azeroth.
Mm-hmm.
So we could see whole new things, like a place in Dalaran that is not Dalaran. We could see the outpost thing you mentioned earlier. We could even just see that they don't retrench as a nation organization because, they didn't really need to be one. So, yeah, there's a lot of possibility there. And I do think that it's interesting to set up that, you know, this is where we got to and this is how it ended in this. I think that's good. I think that should be something that we have more often in the game, frankly.
Yeah, I tend to agree. But Scribbly asked another question, which I think we can talk about as well, because I think this also kind of ties into a little bit of the storytelling aspect of it, which is, I haven't kept close tabs on the Blizzard story and franchise development staff, but I am aware of the recent-ish departures, and that Christy Golden in particular was among those that are known with the company. I noticed that we also did not get a book with The War Within, but three short stories. I only started getting really interested in WoW lore in the last couple of years, so I'm not familiar with what we should expect from story production. What can you share about the state of the story team at Blizzard, and what do you expect from its current state? To be truthful, we don't know the full extent of the story team aside from a couple people that we personally know that are still there and still very much, you know, looking to make sure that good stories are made. That said, there are some things that I think are worth noting here. Like, one, the lack of a book, I think, is something that a lot of people noticed. I think I was surprised by this. We got a book at the end of Dragonflight, however, which I think is still sitting next to me, actually. So we did get a book. It just wasn't directly with The War Within. It was telling a story or a continuation of the story or finishing of the story for Dragonflight. And I think that's intentional. And I think that's intentional because what we're at is at the start of a trilogy of storytelling expansions, essentially. The War Within, Midnight, and then The Last Titan, or The Final Titan. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head right now. But these are all interlinked together, which means their story is all interlinked together. And in a lot of ways, this first expansion is taking the place of what would normally be done of a book. It's sort of the intro to the meat of the story. Because if you think what we're doing in this expansion, while it will likely be epic, this is the rise to the crescendo. This is, you know, leading up to whatever happens in Midnight, which is that middle expansion, which will probably be the vast majority or meat of what the storytelling is in all of these expansions. It's going to be dark revelations and what have you, where all of this is setting the groundwork for it. We're learning a lot about Xalatath. We're learning about ourselves. We're learning about the world beyond the borders of the Azeroth that we know. Again, before this expansion, we had no idea that this island existed. We had inklings of it. Matt and I talked about this when we started talking about Avaloran last expansion. But we didn't know how big it was, and now we have more information of even more land masses. There's an entire empire of Arathi out there, and if there's these, there's probably more. The world has essentially grown exponentially from where we left it last time. Every expansion is adding more and making the world bigger than it has been, and this is just laying that groundwork for even more. We didn't need necessarily a book leaning into it. And to be fair, the three short stories that we got here, that's been pretty common for most expansions. Most expansions, even if they get a book, there's going to be shorts or short stories or something from either multiple characters' perspectives or a very specific character's perspective leading into that expansion, sort of setting up some of the character work. As far as what I expect in the future is I expect that we may get a mid-cycle novel. I don't know who will write it. I don't know if we'll get one immediately, but I think sometime either before, during, or after Midnight, we may see another book. And I think what that book will do, if anything, is operate as a way to flesh out the little in-between bits that are sort of lost during gameplay. Because again, this is an MMO. There's a game, and you have to balance that gameplay with as much story as you put into it. There has to be a level of balance to it. That doesn't mean they can't fill in those gaps. And I'm sure they will. But I do expect that there's still a focus on story, on telling a good story, and making sure that it is still cohesive. And that's what I expect moving forward. And I think that's the best that I could hope. And now I'm going to shut up and let Matt talk.
I mean, you've pretty much said anything I might have said, except that the simple fact is we don't really know what the effect of people leaving is, because we aren't privy to the way these things are made. You know, there's lots of stuff we don't know because just nobody talks about it.
And to be clear, Matt and I don't go asking for it either.
No, I don't. I don't. I mean, I tell you up front, I talk to Christy all the time on social media. I've never once asked her, what's the deal with that? Because
it's rude.
You know, I wouldn't do that for anybody who lost their job, you know, however it happened, however amenable it was, nothing. It's not my business. Eventually, they'll probably put out another book, but I have no idea who they're talking to. I have no idea. Like, it's very possible that they're moving away from outside media for a while because of the continuous, there's always been a push-pull on the idea of outside media for games. On the one hand, it's a cash cow. You know, you can, when a game is popular enough, you can put out books and, you know, sell books to people and get more money. On the other hand, a lot of times people get tired of stuff happening in books that then translate over into the games, and they haven't read those books, so they have no idea what's going on. I remember when the Illidan book came out, which is one of my favorite World of Warcraft novels. Really good book, in my opinion. People got really mad that they had to know that Illidan knew about this web of stuff. And I'm like going, it was a minor thing. You didn't really have to know that much about it, honestly. But it was a good book. Ultimately, this stuff has come and gone all the time. We've seen multiple books get written. And quite frankly, Christy wrote books for them before she worked there.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite possible they could theoretically come to her and say, hey, you know, we know you don't work here anymore, but would you like to get paid to write a book? And most writers are going to say yes, unless they're really bitter about something. A writer as prolific as Christy is might say yes, because she just, you know, hey, sure, money to write about this thing I used to be really involved in. Who knows? I don't know. But I will say that I think at this point, the World of Warcraft story is very big, not just broad, not just complicated, but just straight up big. There's a lot of moving parts to it. So I don't think we can make any kind of real judgment as to what's going on there or how important it's going to be, simply because it isn't really our wheelhouse. I hope that's some kind of answer.
Yeah. Well, I think we might have time for one more here. And I think this is, it's a little removed because it is no longer the holiday season, but this also comes from Scribble Lee. I think we can spend a couple of minutes answering it. Just who is Great Father Winter? What do we know about him from lore? Bonus question, if Great Father Winter was incapacitated for a season, which WoW character would be most likely to step into the shoes and save the Feast of Wintervale and its many festivities? Almost as if it was a holiday movie. I don't know if we know a whole lot. I think it's just a thing that was created that kind of grew its own legs, right?
I'm sorry, when you said grew its own legs, my brain went in weird directions. So you gotta tell me what you want me to say here. Like, restate it or something. My brain is just not working.
Yeah, so I mean, okay. Great Father Winter, we know, is said to be...
Oh, okay, now I understand. I didn't hear the Great Father Winter part, so you just started talking about things growing legs, and I was like, what? Are you talking about Dryders? No. Great Father Winter is Hodir. It's, in my opinion, has always been, in lore terms, a cultural memory of Hodir. Just like the Tyr has that cultural memory of, you know, the silver, all the various Tyrs, this, Tyr's hands, silver hands, you know, the Order of the Silver Hand. There's a cultural remembrance of the Titan Forged that traced down into humans, because humans come from cursed Vrykul. And that's to me, in my opinion, that lore of the game has always been hinting that Great Father Winter is Hodir.
Yeah, like, I just want to read this off real quick, because I think that's on the right track, and I think that makes a lot of sense. So it's the Wintervale is said to be stemmed from a supernatural being referred in many cultures as Great Father Winter. As he would walk the land late in the seasons, winter itself would be his billowing cloak. In his wake was the blanketing of the land in snow, and thus it is said that Great Father Winter would cast his wintry veil over the land. As Great Father Winter walked Azeroth, it is said he would provide a bounty for those who welcomed his presence. Those parts of Azeroth may lie in snow. It gives the land time for rebirth and renewal. As such, the idea of feasting during the Wintervale would bring together communities as they shared whatever they had. Typically, a single day of merriment and feasting welcomed the change, all in anticipation of the land's renewal. That does sound a whole lot like Hodir, who is a winter keeper, who... when you go there, what is his little room all about? Snow and cold, and looks like it's essentially a winter wonderland inside of there. And if keepers are roaming the world, especially if it's on that Titan-built highway, the Path of Titans or whatever we gonna call it at this point, that we know physically existed, we see elements of it. If he went from the north to the south to check on the different settlements and the different Titan Forged encampments, and brought winter in his wake, because that seems to be what he would do, because that's just what happens around him.
Valentine's Day is coming up, and for me, there's only one place I trust, 1-800-Flowers.com. This year, 1-800-Flowers wants to make sure you're a Valentine's hero with an exclusive offer. Double the roses for free. When you buy one dozen, they'll double your bouquet to 2 dozen roses. It's the perfect way to say I love you without breaking the bank. Trust me, 1-800-Flowers always delivers. To claim your double the roses offer, go to 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Have you ever wondered if there is a dark side to your neighbor, your boss, the delivery driver? These seemingly ordinary people walk among us, and sometimes they harbor the darkest of secrets. The award-winning podcast They Walk Among Us has returned for its milestone 10th season. The show opens with a chilling two-part investigation into a lesser-known serial killer. In 1986, Kenneth Erskine, dubbed the Stockwell Strangler, terrorized London's elderly. A drifter with no fixed address, Erskine proved eerily difficult to track. Join us as we uncover the haunting stories of his victims, trace the investigation that finally brought him to justice, and examine the lasting impact of his crimes. Follow They Walk Among Us anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Yeah, I could honestly see that becoming one of those things where, over time, the depictions of him, who essentially is a very tall Vicruel that could very easily be mistaken for a dwarf because of the beard, and his stature and how he stands and walks, I can absolutely see that eventually turning into what this memory of it is, because we talk about this on the show a lot, right? Where oral tradition is always interesting in real world storytelling. And a lot of times you see that represented in game as well. Things change as time moves. When people tell the story will shift. Things will eventually morph into other things, informed by what the current reality is around them, the story that they heard, their own perceptions. All these things are factors to it, and they change the way that that story is told. And I could easily see that being, the Winter Vale is the time where Hodir came to check on us and make sure that, you know, we were doing what we were supposed to be doing, or to, you know, make sure that the land got a wintry blast so that it would eventually thaw and then would feed water to the fields so that there would be another cycle of rebirth for Azeroth. I could see all of these things over the years morphing into, he wasn't really that big. He was only, 16 hands tall, he wasn't that big. He was only 10 hands tall. Or, he was just another dwarf who, again, the Earthen were probably one of the more common, I think, of the Titan Forged that we know of. I think they were the most, one of the most prevalent. And I think that's even supported when we go to the halls of, why can't I think of the Halls of Stone? Like, the vast majority of them, while there are Vicruel, the vast majority of them are dwarves. They also seem to have some of the most variation among the ones that we have met. So it's entirely possible that as they started telling those stories, it just became another Earthen, and then eventually another dwarf, their great ancestor, or whatever the case is. So, and I think it's also interesting that even all the depictions, and especially in the older stories, he is often referred to as a titanic entity, which could be taken any number of ways, him just being really, really tall or really, really big, or he could literally be an entity created by the Titans. So Matt may be onto something. Great Father Winter may actually just have been Hodir doing his job. Because, I mean, we don't even know what his job really was, do we?
I mean, no, not really. We've never really heard from any of the stories about either Hodir or Great Father Winter. You never hear anyone saying, this is what he was put here to do.
We know that he was the father of the Frost Giants, right?
Yeah. And the Frost Giants and giants in general were created to basically serve as earth moving devices. They were there to help reshape the world.
Or till
after the after the Great War with the, you know, old gods and their earth, their elemental minions.
And which makes sense because he was associated with Golgoneth, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead.
No, that was it. You pretty much got where I was going for.
Yeah. So who knows? Maybe. And I mean, look, go back and I want you to go and look at the in-game depiction of Hodier and take a look at what he looks like in-game and compare him to what Great Father Winter looks like. There's a lot of similarities with the way the beard is braided, the way the hair is tied up in a top knot. There is a lot of similarities there. So I would not be surprised in the slightest if Hodir was originally Great Father Winter. And now that he's no longer stuck in Alduar, maybe Great Father Winter will walk the land again. That'd be great for Wintervale. Yeah.
That's going to add the Wintervale story of the time that Great Father Winter was taken to the, you know, taken to the Twisting Nether and tortured by demons. And then Great Father Winter's brother, Great Father Thunder, showed up and got him out of there alongside Great Father, some human adventurer or whatever. This orc shaman they knew.
Good times. But I think that's going to do it for today. Friends, I do want to remind you that Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means that this podcast, site, and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast, or the Q&A and ads-reset experience. Again, if you have questions for this or any of our podcasts, be sure to send those in to podcast@BlizzardWatch.com, singular podcast. Specify the show that it is for in the subject line, as well as any special pronunciation of your name. You can also hit us up on Discord in the Q and Podcast Questions channel. Same rules apply. You can also hit us up on the Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel if you are a Patreon supporter. We tend to look there first as a way of saying thank you for helping us keep the lights on. And you can also reach out to us through Patreon directly, where Liz and or Dan will ensure that we get those questions. You have many different ways to contact us. We encourage you to do all of it. But with that, folks, we'll see you next week.